Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David
and Donald. This week, we are exploring psychics and psychic powers. Psychic Dave, what is your take on ESP and extrasensory perception and psychic powers?
Well, you know, I think my thing is I refer to them generally as psychic abilities, and I think it's, granted, it's a semantic thing, but psychic powers, you know, I always feel like some guy with a, you know, with a big brain and a big cape or something like that. These are my psychic powers, you know, I have a big P on his chest or whatever, you know. But as far as psychic abilities go, yeah, I do believe that everybody has some degree of extrasensory perception or psychic abilities, or whatever you want to call it. I think it's innate in our species. I think that there's so many energies and so many things that go around us, and the nature of reality goes so much deeper down the rabbit hole than our basic five senses, that yes, I do believe that everybody has some kind of extra abilities, as it were.
Do you have any of your favorite types of abilities that you want to explain more of?
Oh, there's so many different camps of it. I mean, we address some of it in divination. I think divination kind of taps into it as a tool. When we talk about psychic abilities, I think the big ones that people always think of, one of the biggest ones I think people think of is precognitive abilities, being able to see future events come to fruition. That's probably one of the biggest things. I mean, precognitive abilities, I would say, is probably one of the biggest ones. Like, for example, if I said, yeah, I'm going to go to the store, and someone was about to ask me, someone says, ah, I was about to ask you if you're going to go to the store. You must be psychic. There we go. You know, people don't often think of mediumship. They think of psychic as mediumship, but that's not one of the stereotypical ones, I would say. You know, you go to see a psychic, you want your fortune told, for example.
As opposed to talking to dead relatives or those, or channeling or anything like that. Is that what you're referring to when you say mediumship?
Yeah, I'm definitely referring to speaking to people who have crossed over, passed over the other side, spirits, that kind of thing. And there's an idea that all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums.
Yeah, that's one of those areas I'd have to say is my least researched area of psychic energy and abilities and stuff like that is that of mediumship. My interests have just flowed more to the precognition, the clairvoyance, the telekinesis. Still haven't got that one down yet, though.
what do you mean, haven't gotten it down?
Oh, the whole mind over matter, being able to move things with your brain.
Oh, okay.
I've been working on it since I was 12, and I'm still not there yet.
Well, then let me ask you this. This that lends to this question. Are we born with specific psychic abilities? Can specific psychic abilities be developed?
I think that we're all born with psychic abilities that we are more natural to us than others. To answer your question there, yes. Can we develop other types of psychic abilities throughout our lives? I would say yeah, because my understanding of how psychic abilities work has to go from our spiritual maturity to a large degree, which implies that there's a reconditioning of the chakra system, of your aura, of those energies that are working there. And so if those align in a certain way, then they would lend themselves to new psychic abilities.
The question is specifically, can you develop specific psychic abilities? Let's use telekinesis. I agree with you that as time goes on, we can develop additional psychic abilities or other psychic abilities. Could a person set out to develop their telekinetic ability and be successful?
I believe they could. If you take it out of the psychic ability realm, and let's say, we'll put it into sports. If you have somebody who's not very athletic and not very good at sports, can they learn how to play the game and be good at it? Sure, like what we talked about in a previous podcast, it may take them a lot more work to get up to the level of somebody who just has athleticism as a natural ability, but they can still have it. And I believe psychic ability is along the same lines where everybody has their natural talents when they're born, but you can also develop talents as you progress and grow consciously.
And what you're saying is that you may be able to develop it rather easily, or it may be very challenging and take a lot of work, depending on whether you're naturally inclined to it or not. Is that right?
Oh, correct. Totally.
Okay. And then how would a person know what they're naturally inclined to? Just because they happen to stumble on it? Because they predicted, I don't know, they predicted rain on a given day? Or you're laughing because you know I'm trying to come up with a funny analogy, Mr. Witty here.
I totally understand.
But it fell flat. My psychic funny ability just turned off there.
Your train derailed.
My train did derail. It jumped the track.
And you
I'm
know
very
what?
Sad.
And I did not see that coming for one minute.
Oh,
I didn't see it coming at all. It's just like,
look at that. Your psychic powers are down now.
Dave was going. Oh, look at that. What happened to his train? Oh, I should have seen that coming.
But alas, it fell flat.
I need to meditate more. Oh.
Yeah, you know, that's actually probably one of the most common things that I've heard from the psychic community, wherever the community resides, mm-hmm. is that the best way to develop anyone's abilities, psychic abilities, is through meditation. Have you come across that as well?
To a large degree, if you're going to talk to just the general populace and not take any specific individual, then yeah, I would say meditation in any one of its various forms would definitely help, because it centers you and it helps you to grow spiritually and, like what I was saying earlier, strengthen your aura and stuff like that so that you can develop some of the abilities and gifts that you may not already be experiencing. Meditation, definitely very, very helpful. Now, is it an absolute requirement? No, I can't say that at all. There are people I've met who are extremely intuitive, whose lifestyle is what we'd consider very unhealthy. And yet they were able to pick things off left and right and backwards and forwards. And it's just like, how can you be so accurate when you live this kind of a lifestyle? You know, you drink, you smoke, you know, you don't really take care of yourself. It's just like, okay, what's going on here?
Oh, so you're saying that there's not a good, clean living prerequisite. If I don't lie and if I eat only honey and if I do all these things that I will gain psychic abilities. You're saying that that's not necessarily the case. You can be a guy who basically eats dirt and smokes pine needles and drinks lighter fluid, and you'll still could easily have these extra sensory abilities.
Oh, totally. And it goes along with what you're able to find out about yourself, how you learn to deal with and work with your abilities. Can anybody develop any one of these psychic abilities? Well, yeah, through meditation is one way, but at the same time, if it comes naturally, how would you know which one you're naturally gifted at? Normally, people, when they start getting around 7, 8, 9, or 10, if you're early, or even puberty, where the world starts acting a little not so correct. Like for me personally, when I was, I believe, 10 or 11, I had 6 months where I had just weird dreams. They weren't fantasy dreams or anything. They were just little snapshots of normal people doing normal things. And one was like a school cafeteria, and one was a certain individual that was dressed a certain way. And then another one was just a certain place that had a certain type of architecture. And at the time, I was sitting there going, okay, sure, whatever. I didn't actually think, oh, I'm having these big psychic dreams and everything. But over the next 2 years, those dreams, those little snapshots started coming into play quite a bit. One of the earliest ones is when my family had moved, and so I had started a new school. And one day I was sitting there in the cafeteria, and I turned my head to the left. And just as I did, I saw the exact same snapshot that I had seen in my dream, you know, 7, 8 months before. Mm-hmm. There were a number of little things that went along with that as well. Looking back, I can say, oh yeah, natural ability in precognition. I wasn't, you know, 10, 11 years old saying, I'm psychic. I am having psychic dreams. I am so awesome. No, I wasn't doing that at all. So I believe that your natural ability for whatever psychic ability you have will be presented majority before you're 20 years old.
Of course, you've met people that have either been psychic or claim to be psychic. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much personal validity do you give the experiences people share with you? Do you believe they're valid because they believe they're valid? Or do you use kind of a scrutinous eye?
it depends on what experience they're relaying. If they're saying, oh yeah, I predicted George Bush would be reelected in 2004, and you know, it's 2010, I'd be like, we'll put that on the neutral level because I didn't know you back then. We don't have any hard proof that you did. When I'm talking with somebody, it also picks up on other cues that while they're talking, such as nonverbal communication, stuff like that, that everybody does when they're talking to somebody or they're telling somebody's telling them a story. For me personally, I use those same levels of critique where I don't instantly say, oh, you're full of poo-poo. That story just couldn't have happened. That's just wrong. I don't start off like that, and I don't instantly go, oh, wow, that is so cool, totally.
Right. You kind of reserve judgment, I guess.
Yeah, I basically try to look for the cues of, is this a truth for them that they're telling?
But the reason I ask that is because psychic abilities, paranormal experiences, and a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this podcast, a lot of people reserve skepticism. Science can't seem to validate a lot of these things. So a lot of people are pretty skeptical of what they say is psychic. And a lot of times the skeptics will explain actually what seems pretty logical. They will explain away what might be considered a psychic experience. They'll chalk it up to coincidence, for example. Oh, like a precognitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a dream about something and then it happened, they're saying, well, you know, how many times did you dream about something that didn't happen and then you just happened to hit lucky on this? It's like betting 23 on the roulette wheel. You know, how many times does it spin 23 and you lose your money? But, you know, it's like the gamblers always talk about how much they won, but never talk about how much they lost.
Oh, exactly.
I give a lot of validity, as I said at the top of the show, to psychic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there's a lot of people who want so badly to be psychic or believe they're psychic that they will, you know, grasp at straws at anything. On the other side of that, in the psychic community, there's some discernment, and there's also the charlatans, of course, as we know.
In American culture, it's still very woo-woo to talk to a psychic or, like we said in the divination podcast, to have your cards read. It's still one of those mysterious things. And if it's a area where you can make a lot of money, and it is, then you're going to have people that have a authentic psychic ability working with people that are just out to get the fastest buck they can and move on.
Do you think science has something to do with it?
I believe it's one of those things where if science could actually come out and say without any hesitation whatsoever that we have scientifically proven psychic ability, this is how it works, this is everything we know about it, ... like that, things would change pretty quickly. The problem with doing that is the nature of psychic abilities. Anyone who has ever worked with psychic abilities, their own or heard about other stuff, learns very quickly that it's not 100% accurate 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I have met one person one time who claimed that they were 100% accurate 100% of the time. I was trying to be as cordial as possible, but at the same time, inside I was saying, no. The nature of how psychic ability works is you're not going to be 100% accurate 100% of the time. Now, you can be 100% accurate 80 or 90% of the time, and that's pretty high right there. A lot of times when psychics or people with psychic ability are being tested by the scientific community, there's a lot of different factors that are influencing them that severely limit their ability to present what they can do in a highly sterile, highly controlled area.
I wanted to ask you about the idea of accuracy, because that really kind of pigeonholes some psychic ability. For example, telekinesis, there's not a matter of accuracy or not. you move an object without touching it or you don't, you know, with no strings attached. But as far as accuracy, are you talking about like precognitive abilities, predicting the future, how many times you know, the squiggly line or the star shows up on a card, that, mm-hmm. you know, when you guess it, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, exactly, because those are the tests that have been developed over the past 60, 70 years, where the scientific community has said, if people can pass these tests, then we can scientifically prove that psychic ability exists. they've tested hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. What they've come up with is basically, we're inconclusive. It's like cold fusion back in the 80s. One university came out and said, we've discovered how to use cold fusion, but it couldn't be replicated in other areas. It couldn't be replicated by other universities or other corporations. So basically they had to say, we don't know what y'all are doing. We can't replicate it. It's an anomaly. We just have to assume that that's what it is. And a lot of the same thing kind of happens with people that are being scientifically tested for psychic ability. There are anomalies that happen in one research camp, and then another group will do the same exact type of test and come out with different results. There's no hard, fast rule that says, do it this way, and if we get these results, then it proves psychic ability. That's what the scientific community is looking for, is something that works 100% of the time, every single time, no matter who's doing the test or who's being tested.
Empirical evidence.
Yeah. And what we said at the beginning, not everybody knows what kind of psychic ability they have. And going into a test where, you know, it's like, oh, we'll pay you $50 to sit in for a research experiment for psychic ability. And like, I like $50.
Yeah.
One thing that I have found that with any and all psychic ability whatsoever, with its accuracy, is the connection to other people and the importance that it is to yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of that connection that people share that really kind of strengthens it. I think there's a lot of other elements that too that play into the strength of a psychic experience.
Oh,
and a lot of it is
enlighten me.
Well, you have been enlightened.
Woohoo!
I don't want to sound so glib to say belief.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say that just the conviction and the faith and belief in your own experience. The word I was looking for is trust. That's the word.
Gotcha.
More than belief is trust. When people have a psychic experience, or they're learning to have a psychic experience, our natural inclination is to say, especially coming from a scientific community and a scientific paradigm, is to say, that was my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I really experienced that. So what happens is they dismiss it offhand before they even give themselves a chance to validate it through their own experiences.
Totally.
And I think what you said about having a connection with another person helps to validate that experience and helps to strengthen it due to the shared psychic energy, you know, that people inherently have.
I agree wholeheartedly. Every person I've ever met, myself included, when they start consciously developing their psychic ability, have said that exact same thing that you mentioned over and over again, where I don't know if this is my intuition or my psychic ability or if it's just my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not taught how to develop our intuition. What it comes down to in the very end is, if you have a psychic ability, you have to learn how it works with you.
I think that the imagination and dreams and psychic ability come from a very similar source.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, a lot of people can't tell one part from another. I think to me, it's like becoming a connoisseur of something, whether you like wine, whether you like coffee. For example, if you spend $20 on a bottle of wine or $200 on a bottle of wine, I'm probably not going to be able to tell the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I like wine, but I just don't drink it very often enough to really discern one from the other. Mm-hmm. You know, I know bad wine when I taste it, that's for sure. It's another way of saying, you know, I know that's my imagination. Oh, yeah, you know, I predicted that some guy was going to jump in the air and go up in there 200 feet, you know? Yeah, that's imagination. The people who are wine connoisseurs, they've learned to tell the difference, the tiny subtle difference. Oh, this has an oaky taste. This has a you know, charcoal. I don't know. I don't know wines. But, you know, they have that little bit of discernment. I'm a coffee drinker, and mm-hmm. I'm not a true cupper, but I can discern coffee more than the average palate because I roast my own beans, all that other stuff.
Mm.
So I can tell one cup of coffee from another, where another person who's tried it can't tell the difference. Mm. Like Jackie's parents. They're like, it's all coffee to me. Yours is really strong. You know, I think it's when you teach yourself to discern. And I think with the imagination versus with a premonition versus with maybe contact from outer energy, whether you want to call it spirit or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they have different flavors. And I think if you learn to listen and taste and hear the subtle differences between those two, you can start to develop what is a psychic communication versus just your imagination gone wild into Dr. Seuss land.
Well, that's interesting because there is one area of a psychic ability that I don't know if it would actually fall into that category that you just mentioned or if it would be in some other category for you. And that's the whole out-of-body experience where your body is in one place and your consciousness and your astral self goes out and can, you know, basically roam the world.
Hmm,
so would that actually be a psychic ability or would that be something more like mediumship where it's just something that you're able to do?
Well, I think if we're talking about things that are just beyond the five senses, then we can lump it into the psychic conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I would put out-of-body experiences in that same realm of psychic experience.
Mm.
In other words, I think if somebody said, yeah, I picked that up, I tasted it, and it tasted like chalk to me. Yeah, most people are going to take their word for it. If they said, well, you know, I had an out-of-body experience, and I saw your house, but I was sitting in my living room, people are going to go, yeah, you need to be on meds. So I would say, if people want to say, yeah, you need to be on meds, there's psychic stuff maybe going on there. So with out-of-body experiences, yeah, that's another thing. I mean, that you can chalk up to that subtle difference in flavor or whatever it is. I mean, have you ever just kind of imagined a different place that you were at?
Oh, it wasn't a matter of imagining it.
You actually had the out-of-body experience that we're talking about.
I've never been able to have a conscious out-of-body experience, but I've had some unconscious out-of-body experiences when I was asleep. I remember one when I was 9, the way that my room was set up was the head of my bed was up against the window and the doorway to the hallway was on the complete other side of the wall. And I remember being 9 years old and having to get up in the middle of the night to go to the restroom. I got up, I walked out towards the door like I normally have done hundreds and hundreds of times before, and then all of a sudden something just felt odd. Something did not feel right. I don't know why I did, but all of a sudden I looked back on my bed and I could see that I was still sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing I remember thinking is, oh, I'm still asleep. And that was it. It was basically my brain said, you're not supposed to be out of bed when you're asleep. So you're not going to be out of bed when you're asleep anymore. And I think that's what happened at that point. The second time that I had an out-of-body experience was when I was rushed to the emergency room when I had a pretty severe, you know, auto accident. And I remember being rushed into the ER and everything, and it wasn't until I was in the ER that I blacked out. The next thing I remember is basically lying on this very uncomfortable table. There was some male's voice over my head. He basically said, if we don't operate on you, you're going to die. Hmm. At that point, it was weird because I was hearing it in my ear, but I was also hearing it about maybe 10, 15 feet behind me. Well, when he said, or you're going to die, the moment he said die, I turned around and looked behind me and I saw this doctor, and he had brown hair and all this other stuff. I could describe him to a T. One of the things that really, really caught me right there was he had brand new Nike shoes on. And this was I found out later was ER surgeon, but when he said, "Or you're going to die," and this is going to sound silly, when I turned around, everything flashed really quickly. I saw him really quickly from behind, and I could tell that I was the one on the operating table. The next thing I remember saying was, "Oh, I'm not dead yet." When I woke up, and a few days later, actually I think it was only about a day later or so, he actually came into my room to visit me to see how I was doing. And I said, I want to see your shoes. You know, being a doctor, like, okay, your vitals are good. You're like, you want to what? I was like, let me see your shoes. He lifted up one of his shoes for just half a second. And I was like, yeah, those are definitely them. You know, brand new Nike shoes, exactly like I remember seeing. At that point, I was still sitting there going, okay, I have been able to verify information in a way that I should not have been able to gain information. At the same time, you know, you relate that experience to other people or even yet put it under scientific scrutiny. There's all kinds of excuses and ideas and explanations for, oh, well, you were severely up on severely high on drugs that were keeping you alive, and you were just imagining this, and then your brain was moving stuff over here and like that. Kind of like when they say you have a near-death experience, the whole idea of seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, they're like, oh, no, that's just your optical sensory part of your brain shutting down. Like, that automatically means that it can't be a spiritual thing just because it has a biological corollary?
Well, here's an interesting question about that. Now, are these skeptics crying out? Is that what we tend to hear, because the skeptics are the ones that are talking loud? And the psychics are the ones that are going, I better not say anything because people are going to think I'm crazy. So is it the, you know, and scientific community is patting the skeptics on the back saying, yeah, attaboy. There are a lot of people who believe in God and all sorts of things that cannot be proven. I mean, nobody can prove the existence of God, but yet a lot of people believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And an overwhelming number of people believe in some kind of higher power.
Mm-hmm.
Yet nobody questions them. Well, there are people that question them, but we can print in God we trust on our money, so there must be a general acceptance of the fact that there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
Yet people are not embarrassed to talk about their belief in God, but yet there are people that are, you know, more reserved about talking about their belief in psychic abilities. So is it the skeptics that just have the louder voice and they're just the least shy ones? Is that what it is?
I think to a large degree, yes, but it's also, we live in a scientific world. We believe something more if we can be understood scientifically. The skeptics are able to come up with all these different kinds of scientific explanations for every possibility of every little thing that could possibly happen. And then they pull in stage magicians that will say, oh, see, yeah, I can do this too. You know, oh, cut a woman in half? Well, not doing that because that's not really psychic and people won't actually buy that as being something that's psychic. But I can use the same idea of illusion to make it look like I'm being psychic. I don't know if you remember back in the 70s, I think even part of the 80s, there was a guy named Uri Geller.
Mm-hmm.
And he would bend spoons and he would do this whole thing where if you had broken watches, he would psychically fix them instantly right there. And a little further down the ways, people would talk to him and he would show them how he could actually use a psychic energy in his hand with some seeds. Holds them for about 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, they would start to sprout right there in his hand. Well, James Randi from the Randi Foundation, they basically came out, they had a show on, I think, late 80s, early 90s. See, we found a few stage magicians, and this is exactly how they do it. They would hide the already sprouting one, you know, like this and like that, and they would actually show you specifically how they could do it. Not how they did do it, but how it could be.
That's actually not very scientific, if you ask me. I mean, to disprove the actual individual that's doing it is more scientific than actually saying, well, another person can fake it, so that guy's faking it. That's just flawed logic to me.
The whole idea is, if we can find somebody who can do this, who claims to not be a psychic and is a stage magician illusionist, then we can go over here to the person that claims to be a psychic and is doing the exact same thing, and we can discredit them in a heartbeat.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. What they're proving is that something can be faked. But mm-hmm. You know what? Anything can be faked, really.
You mean the Matrix isn't real?
You know, it's interesting you talk about the Matrix. It's really interesting you talk about the Matrix. And I think the Matrix is one of the most beautiful analogies about reality, if we go back to that episode.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard the theory of the 100th monkey?
Oh, yeah.
There's people who've poo-pooed this as well. But the idea is that there's an island where they're studying these monkeys, and they notice one was washing a sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
Other monkeys would observe and in turn start to pick up the habit of washing sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
When it hit an nth number of monkeys, it wasn't this gradual process until all monkeys did it. It seemed that when the nth monkey took on this behavior, it all of a sudden replicated itself amongst this type of monkey on other islands that were separate from these other monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the behavior just kind of, it's kind of like what happened with the Sphinx breed of cats. They just kind of all of a sudden showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an idea that in this matrix of our belief system, that when enough people adopt a specific idea, that idea becomes manifest. And I'm going to use very simple examples of like electricity.
Okay.
Electricity, you know, Tesla played with it and kind of came up with ideas. enough people adopted it. Now look at us. I mean, we can't even imagine life without electricity right now.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody can really tell you what is going on with electricity. It's so mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to control it, but it seems to have a mind of its own, even though we can control it. It's still just so enigmatic. You know, why is lightning strike starting from the ground up?
Oh, yeah.
It's so bizarre. We chalk it up to science. What I'm saying is that science, to me, is magic, but it's just magic that just knows how to explain itself. You know, you ever met those people that they do the most outlandish things, but yet they can justify it, and you walk away, and you're like, oh, yeah. And then when you get back home, you're like, hey, wait a minute. What? You know, there are people that do that, and I think science, well, yeah, you know, gravity works because of this, and they make this explanation. But if you took the explanation alone, eventually something breaks that law open, and then science goes, well, yeah, it just disproved that because this is really the way. I mean, science seems to be creating its own magic and calling it science.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about proving things by science, you're just playing in their own arena. I think it's just a magical system, a psychic system in a way that got created. No, two people can't, you know, share their thoughts instantly. Oh, but they could do it through email. Well, then that's okay. We accept that scientifically, you know.
Yeah, that reminds me of the whole remote viewing that the United States military actually spent a lot of money on to see if it could actually be used as a form of spying on Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with remote viewing, but you would get into a meditative state, and these soldiers would sit there with a paper and pen. After a little while, they would start drawing or writing or describing what they saw when they were supposed to focus on a certain place in Russia. You know, the person would say, okay, we want to see if there's any new things going on at this base here. Here's the name and here's roughly the place. It might take an hour to 2 hours for, you know, one session, but then the military would take these 20, 30 guys' write-ups and everything, and they would correlate them, put them all down and be like, okay, let's see if this is accurate or not. They actually found there was a high degree of accuracy when they used the combined writings and drawings of everybody instead of just one person.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't able to verify a lot of it until, you know, after the Cold War ended. The whole stereotype of a military whole thing is like, if it doesn't blow things up, we're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
They investigated psychic ability as a form of spying. That says to me is somebody somewhere must have said, hey, there is something going on here that I don't understand or I can't explain, but I'm using my common sense enough to realize that it warrants investigation. And if it actually turns out to be something really, really useful, then all the better.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just totally denying it right out and being like, okay, this person, Yuri Geller, is saying he can bend spoons and you know, do all this stuff. Let's get 15, 20 different stage magicians and say, okay, this is what he's doing. How would you fake that if you were going to do that? And like, let's focus more on trying to prove the whole psychic ability thing and get it down to a more specific testing procedures that are more in line with the nature of psychic ability instead of saying, well, if you can't conform to our testing standards, then you just don't work. James Randi Institute has had a thing out for years and years and years where if you can prove you have psychic ability under their testing and procedures that they set up, they'll give you $1 million.
Yeah, you know, my favorite quote about James Randi is, I want you to prove to me that your wife loves you.
Oh, yeah.
And then what I will do is I'll just have another woman that goes through all these actions and convinces him that she's in love with him. And then we go find out that she just kind of conned him and say, well, you know, that just proves that your wife doesn't love you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very subjective thing, psychic abilities. I think there's a lot of symbolism involved with it. I mean, you talk to people who communicate with the deceased or spirits.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times symbolism will come through.
Oh, yeah.
That speaks to it. And the symbolism is based on their own personal ideas. I mean, cats. There are people who cannot stand cats. There are people who love cats. There are people who just don't understand cats. So each of those people are going to have a different symbol for what a cat means to them. So if they have a vision of a cat, what does that mean? Does it mean, you know, killer instinct for some people? Or it means, you know, warmth, companionship to other people. And mm-hmm. I think psychic abilities come through the filter of our own experiences. So how could you really prove or disprove something that works on that kind of level?
Oh, I agree totally with you. It's like, you know, writing a book on symbolism for dreams, applying that to every specific individual without taking into account what's going on with their lives at the moment.
Right.
Like, oh, you saw a white rabbit running down a rabbit hole. You had that in your dream last night. For one person who's, you know, 16 years old, that could mean one thing, as opposed to somebody who's like 82, that could mean something different. And then you take their most recent life experiences. Maybe somebody is just now having a baby and they just got married and all that stuff a few years ago. Someone else has just fallen in love. Somebody else just lost their job. And that whole symbolism of the white rabbit going down the hole could mean, like you said, 100 different things to 100 different people.
Mm-hmm.
And to come out and say, well, apparently the whole white rabbit analogy doesn't work with you because you're not having this specific experience that we have found everyone who dreams about white rabbits going down the hole actually have. So
right.
your dream is invalid and sorry, but we're basically taking away your power by saying, yeah, your dreams don't matter. You're just having a dream because your subconscious was just playing. That's all.
One of the things that kind of lends to that whole 100th monkey idea where it actually becomes into the matrix of human existence and human consciousness to where we all adapt it. Psychic phenomena is so varied and psychic abilities are so varied. It's hard to really pinpoint one arena of that for the human consciousness to embrace en masse and have it manifest into, you know, what science can give a pat on the back to.
If you have a certain amount of people who are consciously able to use their psychic ability in some way, shape, or form, and they're extremely confident in their ability, then that's going to trickle out like the 100th monkey, where there will be more and more people who will suddenly be able to say, oh, this must be a psychic ability I have.
Are we saying that the psychic arena is this big collective consciousness that people are just tapping into?
I think that could be part of it. The only reason I say it could be part of it is because there have been psychics throughout time. But at the same time, you look in just American culture where in the 60s, there was a huge social shift to a more of a quote-unquote hippie ideal. In the 80s, the whole New Age thing really became extremely popular. If it's just a matter of mass consciousness, that would mean that until these movements happened, there would be very little, if any, psychic ability. And I don't believe that. But since they've happened, the whole idea of alternative healing, alternative medicine has skyrocketed. Now, am I saying that that's totally because of this? Not in and of itself. It's kind of going with the whole 100th monkey rule where more and more people are accepting it, so therefore more and more people are more open to it. And then, of course, we have movies and TV shows that show more and more stuff like it, like the TV show Medium, based on a real person who basically talked to people to solve their murders. And, of course, they Hollywooded it up.
They added some sex on screen and stuff like that to get the ratings up. And she's like, nah, I wish my life was like that. My thought on the whole psychic realm, if it were just a collective consciousness, that wouldn't talk about precognitive events.
Yeah.
I mean, that would imply that everybody knew something was going to happen at a thing. And we talked about premonitions, we talked about divinations and kind of tapping into that realm of time. You know, it also ties into that podcast. Look at that. We're just kind of writing all sorts of podcasts together. I like to say that if we took the human experience, which is based on flesh and blood, once you're out of flesh and blood, they say you're not human anymore.
And all bets are off.
And all bets are off, exactly. Thank you. Then, you know, I think what that is we're tapping into a realm that is spiritual, that is part of the human existence that does not involve flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we take away the eating, when we take away the sleeping, when we take away the procreating, you know, the rest is just fluff. When you take away all that stuff that has to do with tactile senses, the thing that's spiritual, the thing that, you know, makes people believe in God, the thing that makes people believe in psychic abilities, the thing that makes people believe in love, all that stuff is in a realm that is beyond the flesh and blood. And whatever resides out there, I think there's a lot of stuff that resides out there. And I think the psychic experiences is part of that. And I think when we allow ourselves to say, we're more than just flesh and blood, we are really these spiritual creatures, these multidimensional creatures that we are. When we embrace that multidimensional part of ourselves, I think we can expand what human being is about. I think it's more emphasis on the being and less emphasis on the human.
Mm-hmm.
Human comes from humus, which is soil. That's the dirt. Being is an existential aspect. It's just your isness, you know, your existence. And I think when you kind of tap into just that idea of your isness without the soil part, you can really start delving into the realms of really what we're about. And a lot of that is what resides in the psychic realm. At least I believe that.
Well said, my friend. Well said indeed.
Thank you very much. I take a bow. Well, once again, we want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening. Also, we encourage feedback. We encourage comments. The ways you can do that is you can leave comments on each of these episode posts on our website, which is taketheredpillpodcast.com. Also, there are links to email general feedback to us with the feedback link. You can also email Donald and I individually through the links on the podcast. You can also give reviews on the podcast in general if you're a subscriber on iTunes, on the page on iTunes that Take the Red Pill is linked to. So once again, yeah, we do thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate having you aboard, and we hope that we're keeping your brain stretched and you very thoroughly entertained, because we're really loving it.
So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you a life fantastic.
And I'm David Deere. Keep your light on.